Today's daf, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Samach Zayin. And we had just gotten up to the story about Nachmon ben Gurion and the incredible fact that the Gemara would say about Nachmon ben Gurion that maybe the reason that his daughter suffered so terribly after he had given so much tzedakah every single day and had the red carpet spread out behind him, and that way the aniyim would be able to collect it, was because he had covered out of it, which is, I mean, it just seems to be an incredibly harsh din. The Chofetz Chaim speaks about this, and he suggests that maybe it's called Idan Ritcha. Idan Ritcha means a time of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger. So over there, the dinim are very strict. And this was the time of the Churban. So because of that, maybe because of Idan Ritcha. But I have a suggestion that I think makes amazing sense. And what can I tell you? I think that it makes so much sense that every one of us would have been very careful to worry about it ourselves. It would be so pushit. And I'll tell you what I think it is. It's the fact that Nachmon ben Gurion, when he was working out how to get that water from that Roman guy, remember? And the question was the sun, had the sun already set and so on and so forth, right? And the entire year there wasn't any rain and the guy was laughing at him. So Nachmon ben Gurion, if you recall, got up and said, Galui v'yadu lefanecha shelo lichvodi ani oseh velo lichvod beis Abba, right? Man, if you tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know perfectly well that there's not an ounce of interest in my own covenant in this. Oh my God, are you in big trouble? Because to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know perfectly well that I don't have any inclinations towards my own covenant, then you are going to pay for every last hint of anything that resembles covet. And that, I think that's exactly the point. And the truth is, I think anybody here would have been scared to death to make a statement like that about anything. You know that I am perfectly innocent in this issue. God help us. So I think it's a dover poshet, but that's exactly what went on over here with Nachmon ben Gurion. I mean, obviously, he only said that in order to be able to be zeicher to the incredible mace that happened afterwards and so on. That's true. But it doesn't change the fact that you made a statement that now you're going to have to stand behind. And that is a terrible thing. Do we know of anything that happened to Yonatan ben Uziel? Are you asking that as a question or what? Well, that we don't know anything that happened? Maybe it was true. Okay. Anyway, let us continue on. So we were discussing yesterday in the Mishnah, we began discussing the different types of items that are inscribed in the Ketubah in different ways. So we made an essential, very simple distinction between cash that's available immediately for investment, and that is obviously by definition completely defined by its market value, and between commodities. And the difference was immense that when it was talking about investment possibilities over there, the chosen had to actually put in an additional 1/3, which means an additional 50%. When it came to commodities over there, he actually deducted a fifth from the value. And so it's entirely into mute yourself. So it's an entirely different way in which we mark it down in the Ksuva. Now, we also had one case, at least according to Rashi, where we were talking about a shuma that was done according to market value by having it done outside of the Beit Chatanut. It had nothing to do with the wedding. They simply went to a professional, got it assessed, and so on. And so over there, in Rashi's approach, it was talking about that was neither a markup nor a markdown. In those cases, you get a complete, perfect, shove, bishove, in the ktuva. Now, there's also other items that we need to discuss because they also have special case in how they are estimated and how we would bring them into the ktuva. So, Amrib Shemin Bar Abba Amrib Yochanan is where we're up to. Hichnisa lo zahav. So, let's say she brings in Zahav. According to Rashi, we're talking about pieces of gold. We're not talking about jewelry or things that are made out of gold that have other elements in them that need to be taken into consideration, their artistry and so on. But she brings in gold. So the idea over there is shaminoto varei kishavyo. So there we have another example of something which is never other than its actual market value, because we can't exaggerate the market value of the gold. Gold is something people get on their computer every single day. It's on their cell phones. First thing they do in the morning is it comes up with their notifications. What is gold worth? And so on. You can't change the weight of it. You can't. So whatever, it's always going to be according to the raw metal. So he doesn't view it as a commodity, which would mean that there would be room for exaggeration or for loss. Remember that there were two issues that were involved in the commodity problem: exaggeration at the Beit Chatanut, and also the fact that things tend to get worn out and or lost. And neither of that would apply to pieces of gold, asks the Gemara. But the Braita says that Hazahav Arehu Kikelim. It seems to be saying that if you have gold, it is just like Kalim. Okay, I mean, Kalim is, I'm assuming that would mean even silver Kalim, right? And that would mean that we need to mark it down, because it's the same thing of anything that is a commodity. So why do you say that gold is Shava Beshava? Says the Gemara, no. It means that gold pieces are treated like Kalim Shel Zahav Delo Pachsi. They are the same as things that are made out of gold that have a clear-cut appraisal. And gold really don't go down in value even because of gradual loss. So you have kalim that are used all the time. So then you have to worry about depreciation. But where you're talking about gold, you don't have to worry about depreciation. First of all, obviously, because of the fact that there is, that's one of the reasons that gold is so important in the world, is that it really doesn't disappear. Even if it would bind with anything, it takes a little bit of heat to get it back. So it's basically there forever. That's why it was used as a way to live forever. People used to imbibe gold and so on, gold powder. But the other reason is very simple, because something that's made out of gold, you don't take out of the cabinet and use it every day. Making something out of gold, it's used on very rare occasions. And therefore, even in terms of the depreciation of damage, loss, and so on, we don't even worry about that. So that could be all that it means, you know? But then if it's talking about kalim of gold, why doesn't it say that gold, meaning metal, is treated the same as kalim of gold are treated? Why say kalim? It's like kalav, like its own kalim. No, isn't that what it should have said? And besides that, I really have a problem believing that it's talking about kalim of gold and not kalim of silver. Because if you take a look at the Braita said, Zahav harehu kikalim, and here it talks about, we'll see what kind of kalim, we're going to explain what the rye is in a minute. Din rei zahav, if it's an actual coin of zahav, so that means that it's been stamped with a face value and so on, so then it's treated the same as any other money, and that can be used immediately for investment. Reb Shemi ben Gamliel says it depends. Now, we don't know what he's referring to, and that's what we're going to discuss in a moment. In a mokum shenagu shelo lefortan, so where the minhag is that these gold, now we're not sure whether he means the gold coins or whether he means the gold metal, but in a place where this gold is not actually immediately exchangeable for money, so then it's like any other shuma, but the difference is that there's no exaggeration and wear and tear, and because of that, it is actually at face value. Well, I shouldn't say face value, because face value is coinage, but it's at the estimated value, as opposed to the difference of adding for cash or subtracting for commodities. Now, let me explain to you what my problem is, okay? Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, tell me what you think Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was referring to when he said, well, it all depends on your location. So was he referring to the last part the part that says that if you have gold dinarim, that then they are the same as any other cash. And Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying, no, even gold dinarim are not considered to be cash unless it's a place that is used specifically to translate them into cash. So then what does that mean? That the Tanakhama holds that even if gold dinarim are not easily put into cash value, you can't just use them. So he's saying that you'd have to treat them like money and add 50% to the value, even though you're going to have a whole issue of translating them into cash. I mean, why? Olo nafke. I mean, they are not over l'socher. They're not instantly usable. So how could it be money? It must be, therefore, the Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was referring to the first part, which said the part about gold metal, right? And it said gold metal is the same as kalim. So what he's saying is that zahav is the same as kalim. Now, what are we referring to? Kalim meaning kalim shel kesef. That is to say that we take off one-fifth, right? So we have a discount on all types of shuma, including gold, whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel says, if hareyu kedinarim shel zahav, b'makom shenagu shelo leforatan. In other words, we will view gold as being the equivalent of having a face value, and we don't discount them in the ksuva. We give it shava b'shava. But then the only way to understand the braita in that fashion is to say that the Tanakhama holds that gold is like kalim of kesef, in which the ksuva will write them at one-fifth less of their value. So that means that Rabbi Yochanan is wrong, because Rabbi Yochanan says that we do not in any way discount the gold in a ksuva. Yeah, who says? Well, it could very well be that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was referring to the Seifa, and he's talking about the actual golden dinarim. And when we say that they're not yodse, what he means is that they're not yodse at all, but that most people don't deal with gold. Obviously, you can find a dealer, and then you can absolutely transfer. I mean, if you've got a guy who's in touch with international finance and so on, he'll take care of it for you. But it's not easy. That's all that Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying. So that, because remember, the reason that we're adding all of this extra value, 50%, meaning one-third milabar, the reason that we're doing that is because it's so readily available for investment. And because of that, we think it's only fair that since he doesn't have to go through any kind of problem in translating this into income, it's only fair that he should translate it with a 50% excess in the ksuva. But over here, all that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is saying is that in a place where it's nafke al yedei adchak, so it is, of course, it has a value, but you're not going to be able to walk into your makolet and pay them in gold coins, obviously. And if you've got somebody who is wants to go into business with you, it's not so posh as you can give them gold coins. So because of that, this is the nafke mina. That according to the Tanakhama, him and the nafke mishapchina. Look, bottom line is you could translate this directly into cash. Okay, so it takes a few trips to find the right dealer. Therefore, we have to add with the classic 50% for cash. Whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel holds marsava kiven de lo nafke el yedei adchak. Since the chassan is going to have to go to a lot of trouble to actually translate this into the kind of value it does. It's not something that's instantly translatable into an investment. So because of that, it's shava b'shava, and we don't increase the value. So we have basically three different dinim in the ketuva. We have cash, which we have to write in the ketuva as 1.5 of its value. And then we have commodities, where the estimation was done as part of the wedding ceremony. And over there, we take off actually 25%, which is 20% of the total of the value. And then we have shava b'shava of certain things, such as the case that Rashi had brought yesterday, where they make up that they do the estimation outside of the chasna hall, or the issues that we have over here of things that are not translatable directly into cash, but nonetheless are not going to suffer any depreciation. And that had to do with the pieces of gold. So that's one way of working all of this out with Rabbi Yochanan. And there's another way. The truth is that we don't even have to say that there's a machlokas between Reb Shimon ben Gamliel and the Tanna Kamma. The Braita itself could just be missing a little piece. And in that case, it would work out perfectly well, according to Reb Yochanan, because it could be that the entire Braita is going like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, and it's missing a couple of words. So it's, what it's saying is like this. Zahav areyu kikelim. So in other words, whatever we write in the Ksuva is the same thing that it actually is worth in the store. Dinrei zahav areyin kiksafim. Bamed varim amurim, that they're like safim in a place where they're translatable into cash easily. Alba b'makam shenagu shalola fatan. So then they're appraised and they are written down at their appraised value exactly, without any changes, no additions, and no subtractions. Divrei Reb Shimon Gamliel. And then the last piece is not an alternative pshat. It needs to have a shin added. She, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, that b'makom shenagu l'olafotam shamino tam v'areihen b'shoveihen, without adding, which adds exactly what Reb Yochanan was saying, perfectly supported by the Braita itself. Okay, but it's all very nice. So you explained my second kasha, right? But I had two questions for you. I asked you if, when it said kelim, it meant kelim shel zahav, then why do you say kelim as if kelim is talking about something else? It should have said that gold metal pieces are the same as gold kelim, kelav, not kelim. How about that, Kash? You didn't answer that. Okay, I didn't answer because I don't have an answer, but I don't think it's fatal. Kash, yeah, you're right, but, it's a little bit of lack of sensitivity in terms of the language. Omribiana. There are other things that we will view as cash. This is how Rashi learns.
Ibaizema.
Oh, sorry. Ibaizema, or there's a completely different way to answer the entire issue. Thank you. And actually, Ravashi Amar, it's talking about the molala. So that Zahava Pricha, now that is a very different kind of thing, not pieces of gold, but the truth is that there's a difference. We're talking about a gold over here that is like Kalim in the Braita, Kalim of Kesev, that is to say, which will answer your question, but it's still not going to be a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. Why? Because Rabbi Yochanan was talking about pieces of gold, and here we're talking about these little bits of gold, like a filling falls out of your teeth, you put it aside, eventually, you're going to hand it in, melt it all down, and so on. But those kind of things do get lost, and they do suffer from depreciation because of that. Every time you open it up and you start weighing it, a little bit is lost. Or according to Ravashi, it could be referring to gold dust. And that for sure, that's already ground down, and that really just scatters. Eventually, it does lose value. Okay, so over there, Rabbi Yochanan, of course, has made it that it's like kalim, it's like any other shuma. Omribiana, there are other things that we treat as cash. As I say, this is Rashi's approach when he says we treat as cash in terms of how it's written down in the Ksuva. Tosfos suggests that it's treated as cash in terms of collection of the Ksuva, which, as the Rabbeinu Tam himself points out, is problematic. This is where the Tosfos brings, we've been speaking about, the Takonas HaGaonim. This is where Reb Shri Ragon brings the Takonas HaGaonim, which is that nowadays, with all of the problems of Jewish ownership of real estate, that we collect the ksuva from metaltalin. So he considers this Gemara to be impossible to learn that we treat it as actual karka to collect the ksuva from it, because that would mean that the later Takona of the Gaonim was not a particular Takona about the metaltalin b'yameihem. And that leads to all kinds of problems, as we'll see. So, Amar Rabbi Yana, Bisamim shel Antokia, Harein Kiksafim. Now, let's say you're in Barnea's neighborhood, and they do all of their business in Bisamim. So that's like, and remember, there were districts that even until very recently, and even in some places still, there are entire towns where the city is completely focused, let's say Detroit, with automobiles until fairly recently, right? So you have the same thing with Antokia in terms of Bisamim. Therefore, when you have Bisamim in Antokia, it's just as good as an investment in cash And therefore, it's considered to be written in the Ksuva as if it were cash, and we write it down at 1.5. That's how Rashi learns. Om Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Om Reb Yonatan. I have other examples of that. Remember the famous camels of Saudi Arabia, where that was their entire export, all of that ugly stuff that would come up from the ground they used to try to cover, and oh my God, what is that messy stuff? And little did they know. And therefore, if you've got, I suppose nowadays, if you've got oil wells, you could translate that into cash and make it at 1.5, right? But in those days, it was camels. So Isha Gova Paranamiam. So she can collect her entire parana, meaning the entire value, the 1.5. Omrev Papi, Hani Tutve Deve Mirse. They are these famous Banana Republic shirts. That's, of course, if you live in a Banana Republic. And those things are included as pure cash. Isha Gova Parana Mehem. The Omer of Papi. I Saki, the Rudi of Ashley, the Kimchonia. Look, I mean, they manufacture these sacks in the town of Rodia. They manufacture ropes in Kimchonia. Whatever. In those locations, if this is basically over la socher, this is what everybody knows, its value, everybody utilizes it. It's just as good as cash because all of their business is done on some level with these things. Isha gova paranameyam. Look at this, would be the equivalent of diamonds in Antwerp, you know. Well, my Rava, Miresh, I used to think, Hava Mina, Hani Arnikin Mechoza. The husband dies and leaves one of these classic money bags. Now, the money bags in Mechoza, they used to package the money in like a specific way that held a specific amount. You know, it was like people looked at that the money per se is like as good as property. So you would rate that up with Purana. The Tosus, here Rashi agrees with the Tosus approach that it means collecting the Ksuva and not collecting the Purana of the writing it down as 1.5, because it is 1.5. I mean, if it contains cash, what's the chiddush, you know? Why is it that a woman would be able to be gova from that? Because asmachtayu alayhu, the women will rely on this milechatchila as being security for a ksuva. And that's what I used to think. You know what I found out? Given the chazoy de shaklilahu, so we used to reward it to them in Mechuzah. And then I saw that after the court rewarded them these things, they would immediately run out and use it to buy property. So then I realized, oh, now, wait a minute. That means that what they're really relying on is the fact that they can translate this into property. They don't trust cash any more than they trust any other metallically. So then I realized you cannot directly collect it as if it were property. Now, Tosis is a big problem with this whole point, because even though he himself suggested that that was the meaning of Purana earlier, he points out that if it really were the equivalent of karka, then why in the world wouldn't a woman be able to be tofesit from lekuchas, which is ridiculous. She can't be tofesit from lekuchas. And that would mean, if it were true that she could, then all of our takonas hashuk would be useless, because the whole deal that we have about not allowing unregistered liens would have been busted up. The reason we did that is to allow the market to function. I mean, if we're going to allow women with a ksuva to go after this kind of stuff, you might as well forget about the market. I mean, anybody can be hit at any time with some mad woman who's going to collect what it is that he just bought, even if it was in some kind of antique shop or something. What would Richie do with his whole collection of moomins? A disaster. You'd have to go to the neighbor. Okay, yeah. Sir Richard, you're on.
Azuk the Helika Mishnah.
Now that was exciting. Now the question is, when we're talking about these dowries, you know, I mean, we need to define what exactly is suitable for a dowry as a minimum. We've been talking about all of these things before, that it really a father should be taking care, like we learned out of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, take husbands for your daughters. How are you supposed to take husbands for your daughters? It's not up to you. So remember, we were Dorish from that Pasuk, that it's incumbent on someone to at least be Divrei Kabbalah. It's incumbent on someone to see to it that his daughter makes an attractive choice of a wife by providing a dowry. So suppose he's Masiyat Bitostan, and he didn't make up in advance any kind of amount that he's going to be giving. So it's assumed that he means to provide her, and that would mean we're talking about even if we have to go and he's not around, and we can assume that this is what the value would have been. He can't give her, he shouldn't give her less than Chamishim Zuz, which we said is the amount of clothing that is a absolute necessity for a year, and that was La'ani, should be Yisrael. We're going to see later on that it's referring here to the same Chamishim Zuz and not a reference to Kesef Tzuri. Now, Lo Yomar Habal, in the event that the father absolutely did not provide her anything, and he was Pasak Lach Nisa Aruma, so he said, listen, this is going to be a straight out naked wedding. You want her? You take her as she is. So the Baal cannot say, okay, if this no goodnik doesn't want to provide any nice clothing for his daughter, let him come to the wedding and watch his daughter get married in jeans. You know, that's his problem. I'm not mechuyev to take care of her before she comes into my home. And after I take her into my home, then I'll take her over and I'll treat her properly, you know. But it's not my responsibility to make sure that she's dressed for her wedding. Even though she's still technically under her father's rishus, it's inappropriate for him to take a wife without giving her the kavod at her wedding. So it becomes incumbent then on the Baal. Now, the same thing would be true if you are a gabbai tzedakah, because here too, we have to define what is the minimum that a tzedakah fund should consider appropriate to provide for a poor kala. So the deal is over there the same. If you're in charge of a tzedakah fund, then you should provide a minimum of 50 zuz. Im yesh bekis, if you've got a lot of money in your tzedakah fund, then that would be, again, la'ani should be Yisrael. But what you really should provide is whatever is needed, lefi chvoda. Now, this is a very famous psak that all of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the stories that we're going to be having in our Gemara, which is that lefi chvoda becomes definitive of tzedakah, which is a remarkable thing. In other words, the Goyim view the idea of charity as to allow the person to exist. He doesn't have any rights to say, but I always used to drive a Tesla. Surely you're not going to deprive me of my Tesla just because I don't have any money. And they would think it would be absolutely hilarious to say that we should actually buy the guy a Tesla. But over here it says that we're mefanesim ota lefi chvoda, and that opens up our eyes to exactly this issue. So let's first talk about what the 50 minimum zuz are. And again, Abaya makes it clear. Omer Abaya, when we talk about 50 zuz, we are not talking about kesef tzuri. We're obviously talking about the regular pshite, which are only 1/8 of the value. Otherwise, we'd be talking about 400 zuz. That is an immense amount of money for clothing. And it's obvious, as Abaya, that the shear of the father's dowry can't mean chamishim zuz tzuri, because at the end of the mission, we talk about giving it to her from tzedakah. The miriktani seifa, im yesh bekis b'farnesim ota lefi chvoda, and we said when we say the kis, we're talking about the arnaki shel tzedakah, as Rechav explained. I mean, could you really think for a moment that we're talking about chamishim zuz mamash? What? Kesef tzuri? I mean, how could it be that? What do you mean? Im yesh bekis? Man, how much could we possibly give her? Chamishim zuz, 400 zuz, we're going to say is a minimum. I mean, what more can we give her with that? Ela shmami, no, we're talking about chamishim zuz, we mean chamishim zuz, epshute. Tana rabbana. As far as this din of the tzedakah fund providing for a yitoma, if you have both a yatom and a yitoma, so you have a boy and a girl, neither of them have parents, and they approach the tzedakah fund, and they need parnasa. So it means they need to be provided with money to eat. Mefarnesim et hayatoma, v'acharkach mefarnesim et hayatom. The girl always comes first, and we explain that, obviously meaning comes first if we don't have enough to go around, and we always explained that this is part of the protection of women qua women, because it's very, very difficult for a woman to go banging on doors and asking for parnasa, and it's inappropriate. Like we said, abanim yachzru al haptachim, like in cases where we had the provisions in the ketuvah, and there's only minimum nechasim, the halacha is boys can go from door to door. And the same thing is true over here. That's because b'nei she'aish darko lachzru al haptachim, lein aisha darka lachzor al haptachim. So therefore, there is no alternative. Again, there are other rishonim. We learned mefarnasim is not going back to eating. We're continuing the same sugya about clothing. Now, how about a case of a yatom and a yatoma who both approach a tzedakah fund for needs of getting married, right? So whatever it is that is needed to get them married to each other, not to each other, I mean each one to whomever they are marrying. The din is that first we marry a yatoma and then we marry off the yatom. And this is not because of going banging on the doors, because you can wait. You don't have to bang on the door. It's not an emergency. This is why Rashi was starting up talking about eating. Eating is an emergency and the woman would have to bang on doors. But over here we're talking about, okay, so she's going to be waiting to get married until she gets enough money together. That is a busha. And since it's much bigger embarrassment for a girl to be sitting around trying to get enough money from her babysitting funds to afford marriage, and a boy who doesn't get married for a year, 2 years, 10 years, whatever, it's so busha. So because of that, we will take care of the woman first. Tana Rabbana, a yatom shaba lisa. What do we get? What do we buy? What are we responsible for a male orphan? Do we just pay for the wedding? No. First thing we do is we rent a house for him to live in. So, chrin lo bayit. And this is basically, as the Rambam says, the normal, except in the klala, but the normal way of living is that first the person gets himself a home before he goes in and gets married. Now starts looking around, where are we going to live? So, of course, everything today is exactly the opposite in the same lotion of the klala. But first, you get a parnasa, and you get a house, and then you get a wife. So the yatom, we're sochrim lo bayit, and then matzin lo mita v'chol kli tashmisho, we then give him a bed and whatever else is necessary to set up that house, and then we get him a wife. Shinema de machsoro asher yechsar lo, whatever is missing in his life, and these are mamish, we just had this in our leanings. Deimachs roa sheyachsalo, whatever it is that he needs, that's what it is. Potoach tiftach yadcha, give him what he needs. Deimachs roa sheyachsalo, so the deimachs roa is the need for a home. Asheyachsar, if he goes into that home without having basics like a bed and a table, so then you have to provide that. Lo refers to a wife. That's the law. So the thing that is most personal is the wife itself. So that means whatever he's missing. So whatever he's missing, yes, that's basic. But you're not to make him rich. But then it explains that the way to define what he's missing is asher yechsar lo, What he personally is missing, now, what he personally misses is obviously a function of how this person has grown up, the society that he lives in, and so on. I mean, somebody who's living in a slum of Rio de Janeiro is not exactly supplied with the same thing as a guy who's living on the West Side in New York, in Manhattan. So there's a difference between what it is that defines for you a minimal subsistence existence, right? So even though you're not believed to be ma'ashro, that's by external standards. But if this is his standard for basic existence, then that's what you got to give him. And if he's used to a Tesla, then that's what you got to give him. And if he's used to having horsemen with people running in front of him announcing that the king is on his way, and that's the only way he gets along, then that's what you're going to have to provide him. So afilu sus l'rechov alav, ve'eved l'rutz l'fanav. As a matter of fact, they say that Hillel HaZaken once bought for an oni who came from a very chashuva family. He purchased him when he had nothing. Sus l'rechov alav, ve'eved l'rutz l'fanav. And one time, the eved didn't show up. So Hillel went and ran in front of him. He himself ran for 3 mil in front of him. All kinds of shilas, how he's allowed to do that. Isn't that a zilzol? And okay, so Samar Matarets, well, he went to play, let's talk about a place where they didn't know him, where this was before Hillel was the Nasi, and it was talking about, when it says he bought him a sus, that it used to be before he moved from Bavel, he used to be rich. I mean, he lived in LA, you know, and he was rich like everybody else is rich with nothing. And then when he moved there to Israel, I told you the story of that doctor. When we moved there to Israel, then you get what you deserve. And then you have what you really have. But anyway, that was when it said that he didn't have anything to eat. Tana Rabban, Maaseh Ba'anshei Galil Ha'Elyon, Shelo Kula Ani Ben Tovim Echad Mitzipori, Litra basar b'choyon. Once they had this tzedakah fund up in the Galil Elyon, and this was Barnea's neighborhood in Zippori, that there was this ani who was from a very chashuva family, and they would buy him a litra every single day, which is quite a bit. I mean, what we're talking about over here is litra basar. It's like, you know, it's enough for you walk into a delicatessen and you get a pound of, it's a sandwich with a pound of delicatessen. It's a big sandwich, but it's not overwhelming. So says the Gemara, what's so special about that? I mean, okay, so the guy's used to a salami sandwich every day. So you get him a big salami sandwich or like even Boost, for instance, right? If the guy's going to be using Boost, you'd have to buy him Boost. There we go. So what's so special about that, asked the Gemara? Amravuna, it's talking about over here, it was chicken. Now, in those days, chicken was very expensive. It's fascinating that this was the same thing my shver, over Shalom. And for them, Shabbos wasn't Shabbos unless they had chicken. If we would serve meat for Shabbos, how do you serve meat for Shabbos? We always had chicken for Shabbos. That was because chicken was very expensive. The reason it was expensive is that when it came to the shechita of a behemah, you have a standing deal with shechtim that are goyim if your behemah is treif and so on, so you can get rid of it. Chickens were just not, it was not worth people to buy off of the Jew to buy a chicken that turned out to be treif. So because of that, the chickens ended up having to include the insurance against tarfus, so to speak, and it became very valuable in their eyes. So you see how it's all relative, basically, right? So to them, the chicken was the most chashuva thing. So that's what it's talking about. Libaitema. You know what? It could mean actual meat, and it meant belitra basar. It meant a litra of coins, Basser. That's how expensive the meat was. Rav Ashi says, no, it means exactly what we said. A litra Basser is like a pound of meat. But the problem was that this was a little town, and if there was nobody else to buy the rest of the animal, of course they had no refrigeration, the whole thing would go to waste. And b'chol yom avimavsite chiyuta metulte, they had to throw out an entire animal just because of this guy's need for his salami sandwich. There was one somebody who came to Rabbi Nechemia. Who does it come to Rabbi Nechemia? So Rabbi Nechemia said to him, so what do you usually eat? Oh, I usually have nice fat steaks and wine, you know, at least 5-year-old wine. That's my minimal. Well, says Rabbi Nechemia, I mean, I eat a little bit of hummus every day, you know. I mean, would you like to join me for some hummus? Or actually said for some lentils. So sure enough, the guy was starving. So Gilgalim Obad Hashem, and he dropped dead. I mean, how are you supposed to eat hummus and survive on that when you're used to these beautiful thick steaks, you know? So he dies. So Rabbi Nechemia said, Oy Lola, said this poor guy whom Nechemia murdered. So he understood that, you know, he didn't give him what he needed. He says, what do you mean, Oy lo lezeh? He should have said, Oy lo lenechemia, shorego lezeh mi baile. I mean, if he actually feels that he murdered the guy, I mean, he says, Oy lo lezeh, it's like blaming the guy. If the guy is the victim, he should have said, oh boy, Nechemia is going to suffer for this one, for having knocked this guy off with chumas, the first recorded chumas death. So yeah, that's what he should have said. No. Rabbi Nechemia held that this guy could not gradually get used to being a little less spoiled, that he had to have a thick steak every single day. That's his problem. He wants to kill himself. Exactly. There was another guy who comes to Rava, and the guy said, I eat these fattened hens and old wine. Right? This is really expensive. So Rava says to him, you're not concerned that you're putting the community out by insisting that this is your minimum for support? You're taking enough support from the tzedakah box that it could support half the town? Lo chayashta lo ducha le tzibure? I mean, like, how do you come to us without embarrassment with, like, this type of demand? Omar lay. So the guy says to him, it's an amazing thing. The guy says to him, I understand what you're talking about. I'm coming to the community for support. I'm not coming to the community for support. I'm coming to God for support. I'm not eating anything of theirs. What the heck are you referring to? So, so you don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides the food for everyone, be'ito, in their own time, be'itam lo nemar. Doesn't say for humanity. It says be'ito. Each individual, what he needs at that point in his life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him. Don't commit his garbage about, I'm coming to you for my food. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides that food. What a chutzpah. This is the way you talk to me? Anyway. So that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is befanaso b'ito. Now, what happens is that at that very moment, Rava's doorbell rings, and in walks his sister that he hasn't seen in 13 years. And she is carrying a wonderful gift for him, which consists of a nice fattened tarnagolet and a big bottle of Yayin Yosha. This is exactly what this guy said he needs to live on. So Rava says to himself, what the heck? Why did this happen? All of a sudden, I've never seen her in 13 years. I've never had this kind of food in my house. So what's going on? It's obviously because of this guy. Omar Lay, so he calls in the guy, this poor man, and he says, forget it. I give up. It's your 100% right. Get up and eat. It was all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it obviously wasn't yours. It wasn't coming from us. And I should have realized that. Bichlal, there's a very beautiful diak. I think I'm pretty sure that it's by. Let's see if I can actually find it. I'm pretty sure that it's from the Me'ashi Loa. And what he says was that Enei Cholei Lecha Yisaberu is the introduction to the concept of poteach et yadecha umasbia lechol chai ratzon. Because what Rava was amazed at was not that the thing had arrived at that moment. What he was amazed at was that it arrived to him. So that's what he's saying. My ach to come up. Why is this being given to me? So he realized, and this is a beautiful thing that the Me'ah Shilach explains. If a person really and truly is Eimed Bifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu and sees that parnasa as the Peseches Yadecha, U'maspia L'chol Chai Ratzon, then he brings that Ratzon to Kol Olam Kulay. In his chus, he can be Mefarnes a world. And that's what Rava was saying. Why is it coming to me? Because it's the Peseches Yadecha U'maspia L'chol Chai Ratzon. From he who recognized the Itay as an individual, he was able to be Mefarnes Chochai, because that was the Madrega that brought Brocha to the Olam. Tanya Rabbanan. Now we're talking about Tzedakah. Now we want to talk about not just the amount of Tzedakah and the minimals of Tzedakah, but also the way in which a person should give Tzedakah such that the person who receives it should not be placed into a position in which he's embarrassed by it, which is introduced by these discussions that we just had. If this is what the guy needs, this is what the guy needs. To put him into a position of, well, don't you think that you're overdoing it by needing this kind of thing? That itself is embarrassing. There are those who learn that we actually paskin like Rabbi Nechemia, and that if the person had the opportunity to get himself used to a lower standard of living, and that the case that we're talking about, the Tarnagolet, was a situation where the person needed it for his health. And this is, the doctor told him, this is what you need in order to be able to be healthy. But in any event, to talking about how to give out tzedakah in a way that it's not going to embarrass the aniyim and the chiyuvim that a person has to actually eat, we need to consider a fascinating thing. Suppose a guy's not taking care of himself. Suppose we believe the guy has enough money to eat, and he is mentally ill. He can't spend money on himself. I mean, there's people like this. So do we provide parnasa even for that? And how exactly do we recoup that parnasa? So Tana Rabbanan, if a person doesn't have money, but he refuses to accept charity, so basically he's becoming malnourished, and he can't really continue to live this way. So then what we do is we pretend to be giving him a loan, notnim lo l'shum halva'a, and then chozrim notnim lo l'shum matana. And then later on, we just forget about the loan. But that way, at least when the person took it, he didn't feel that he was taking charity, and that way he would accept it. Divrei Rabbi Meir, v'chachomim omrim, first we always try to give it to him l'shum matana, and then chozrim v'notnim lo l'shum halva'a. I understand what you're saying, but that's exactly what we said. The guy refused to accept it l'shum matana. That's when we tried. That was the case. L'shum matana or lo shakel. On my Rava, note what the Chachami mean is that we should be poteach lo l'shum matana. We should always first offer it. And not just because the man has proclaimed 1,000 times he doesn't take charity, we should try to make it available to him without his feeling that he's going to have to pay it back. He still refuses, so then we tell him it's a loan. And then the next case in the Braita, Yesh lo ve'inu rotze lehitparnes. Suppose a guy has enough money, and he'd rather starve than spend money. So then notnim lo l'shum matana. So then on the opposite is true. Then we pretend to be giving it to him as a gift. And in the end, we're going to go collect it as if it were a loan. Well, you can't do that, says the Gemara. What do you mean, chozrim v'nifra'im mimeno? So then if you would do that, he's not going to accept anymore. Too low shakil. If he sees that in the end you collect it, so he's going to end up starving himself and you won't be able to give him, go through the same trick again. Ah, no, we mean after the guy dies, will collect the money from his estate, but the tzedakah fund will not be out the money. Now you see from here, this is brought by the poskim, that the only reason that we didn't collect it in his lifetime was because of the fact that then we wouldn't be able to get him that money again, but that the bezdin would have a right to forcibly take money from a guy for his own support, other than the fact that he wouldn't eat. So because of that, we collected only after his death. But that means that we do have a right to see to it that someone's money be spent on his own support. Rabbi Shimon Omer, I disagree. I say, if a guy is insane, let him drop dead. What kind of nonsense is that? I refuse to spend money on myself. You know, you should support me from charity. The heck? If he has money and he doesn't want to spend the money on himself, we have no reason to be worried about him. If he doesn't have money and he doesn't want to take from charity, so the thing to do, says Rabbi Shimon, is to say to him, okay, bring us a mashkan. You got a gold watch? Give us your gold watch and we'll give you cash. Obviously, the guy doesn't have a gold watch. But because we ask him for the gold watch, the guy really takes seriously the thought that we're only looking to make him a loan, right? So then, Kadesha Tazuach Da'atolav, we want the guy to feel really good about himself. Oh, wow, you know, they think I have a gold watch. So he'll say, well, I don't have a mashkin available right this minute, you know? Okay, fine, we trust you. You tell him, we trust you, and you make the loan, and that way he'll end up with money. Now, obviously, you'll never collect it. Tana Rabbana, if you take a look at the pasuk that is mechayev you to give, it says, Ki patoach tiftachis yadchalo v'ha'aveta avitenu de'machsoro asher yachsalo. So the ha'aveta avitenu is the kind of lashon that we use for giving a loan, right? So how do we understand that lashon? So ha'aveta means somebody who doesn't have any money, but he doesn't want to go to tzedakah, lend it to him. And then we recognize that it really was a matana. We don't try to collect it from. Then when it repeats to avitenu, that's referring to the other case of the Tanakama, who does have money, refuses to spend it on himself. So over there, we do just the opposite. We're not nimla l'shum matana. And then, as we said, after his death, chozrim v'nifra'in mimenu. So it says Rabbi Yehuda, v'chachamim omrim, yesho v'eino rotze litparnes, that is, obviously this is Rabbi Shimon, is here the chachamim, yesho v'eino rotze litparnes, then ain't his kakeno, oh, it's not our problem. So then, if, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not our problem, why did the Torah repeat ta'avitenu? Why did it say ave ta'avitenu? Dibrata rakilashon b'nei adam. Because sometimes the Torah uses, now as Tosis points out, if you have a drasha for it, then we don't say Dibra Torah Kelashom Bnei Adam. But if there's no drasha, then we say Dibra Torah Kelashom Bnei Adam. Now that means that you have a right mitzad hasvara to be docha what would otherwise be the drasha, which is a chiddush. In other words, but Rabbi Shimon, you don't hold stam Dibra Torah Kelashom Bnei Adam. You hold Eicha De'ika Lidrash Darshinan. So if we could be derish it for someone who refuses to spend money on himself, shall we not do so? And he answers, no, it's not reasonable. Mar Ukva had a guy in his neighborhood that every day he would put 4 zuz, bitzinora de dasha, he would stick it under the door where they used to have the socket, remember, was a little bit, a hole in which a pin, which served as the like we have in doors that are revolving doors or doors that swing back and forth. So we don't have a typical hinge. We have a pin that can swing in the hole. So he used to fit in 4 zuzim in the tzinura d'dasha. So one day the ani says to himself, I want to be makir teva. Izel ich ziman ka avid b'ayituvus. I want to see who's doing this tremendous teva for me. So it happened to be that that day, that particular day that the Ani made that decision, so he, Mar Ukva, had gotten delayed in the Beis HaMedrash, and he was learning a sugya like we had in the cases before, and therefore his wife came along because she knew that he's going to be going around, and she didn't want to be going, he should be going around late at night by himself, so she came to go with him. So they get to that place. When the Oni saw that he was pushing the door, the hinge out of the way to fit in for Zuzim, so he decided he's going to go and catch them in the act, right? So Nafak Basrayu, he starts pushing open the door. So Marukva and his wife start running, and this guy starts running after them. They want to run because they don't want him to feel a sense of any kind of embarrassment around them. And he wants to be Makir Teva. So they run away and they find this oven, which was Grufa. So there was this public oven used to pay, remember, a certain amount to use the oven. And the coals had been taken out of the oven, but it was still hot. And he, Marukva, and his wife both go into the oven to hide out. And I think the guy will never think to look for us in the oven. And sure enough, the guy never thought. And he walks by. Anyway, Marukva's feet were burning. He felt he was going to end up like being scarred over here. So his wife says, take your feet and put them on top of my feet, because my feet don't get affected by fire. So Marukva says, what, my wife is such a bigger tzaddikus than I am. You know, I mean, why should her feet not get hot and my feet do get hot? So she said to him, no, I'm not such a big tzaddikus. The reason that my feet don't burn is because when aniyim come to the house, I'm able to give them food. I'm in the kitchen, right? So ana shechichna begavi de beta umikarvi anayate. So when I give them things, I give them things to eat. What do? You give them cash. They can't eat cash, so they're going to have to go still to the grocery store. So my schus is greater. But I mean, you know, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you don't think this is a little bit insane to go running into a hot oven? I'm like, what the heck? Umay kulayai. The guy wants to know, and you're going to save him the embarrassment. So you're going to go run into a hot oven and commit suicide. I understand what? This is ridiculous. No, it's not ridiculous. Because the Omar Mazutra Bartu, the Omar Rab, the Amr the Omar of Una Bar Biz, the Omar of Shimon Chasida, or some say it's Omar of Yochan, or Shimon Bar Yochai, that it's literally, Tosfos learns literally elsewhere, Noach Lola Adam, Shiim Psorat Smola Toch Kivshana Esh. A person is better off to actually go and throw himself into a fire than causing a person embarrassment. Minalon mi Tamar. It's exactly what we learn out of Tamar. It says by Tamar, vihimutse, she's on her way to be dragged to a burning, right? And she doesn't tell her father-in-law, you know, listen, you got me pregnant. She doesn't say that. She says, here are the simonim of the person who got me pregnant. So she figures, if he wants to be made, so he will. And if not, I'd rather be burned. And so the same thing was true over here. Now the question is, the obvious question is, the guy wanted to be embarrassed. He says, I want to find out who this is so I can be makir teva to them. So I says, what's your chiyuv to save him in embarrassment that he's running after? I mean, this is basically Yehuda having decided already that he would rather be made about the truth. This person would rather be made that he's poor and that these are the people that are providing for him. So how are we bringing a raya from the mice of Rabbi Yehuda? What would you say? Maybe the pshat is that once the guy would have found out who it was, that he really would have been embarrassed. Never occurred to him that it was Mar Ukva. He figured it was some rich guy, whatever. But now it turned out to be Marukva. Oh, my God, he's being supported by the community fund. And this is terrible. So then he wouldn't have been embarrassed, maybe. Anyway, Marukva have a niya b'shivivute davirogel shidur le arba mea zuziko mala yom kippur. He used to send every Erev Yom Kippur. This is a reminder that some learned that the reason that specifically the tzedakah was given to Erev Yom Kippur is because of the schus of tzedakah to be matzah from the din. And that's why it was given bedafka during that time. Others say that's just because of the fact that, remember, Erev Yom Kippur is the time where you're supposed to be marba b'seudah. It's highly unlikely. So he used to send him 400 zuz. By the way, this 400 zuz might be lav dafka, because there are svarim that count as, so far, they don't claim it's a complete count, 11 different times in Shas. Now, of course, we just look it up on the computer, where it says Arba Mea Zuze in terms of Tzedakah, and it's 11 places that it says Arba Mea Zuze. So it's very difficult to believe that all of those different places were exactly 400 zuz. It's mash, but it's the equivalent, like Abi Tzedakah, that 300 is in terms of normal guzma. Okay, there could be, of course, other remorse in it. So Yuma Khachad, Rina Nealebi Adbore, 1 year, he sends this money with his son. I'll just finish the story because Mamish right in the middle. The son comes home and he says, Dad, this guy doesn't need any money. I brought the money back. So Marukva says to him, I understand, what makes you conclude that? My chazita. So the son says, they were spraying the house that it should smell good with Yayin Yashan, okay? I mean, come on, this guy don't need none of your money. So Marukv says, you're kidding. He is so mifunak and has such a high living style. The guy needs double what I've sent him. I finu, he doubles the 400 to 800 and he sends it to him. Kikonecha nafshe, when the Marukv was dying, he said, bring me out all of those records of how much tzedakah I've given. So I seen lechushbon into tzedakah. Ashkach davi kasibe, and he found that the cheshbon added up to shivas alfei dinari si'anke. A tremendous amount of money. And that's what he had given. So, okay, that would equal like over $100,000, 100,000 dinari, according to some of the mafarshim. Because the Gemara says elsewhere that these dinari in Zayinke is actually 17 dinari. So then Omar, he said, man, that's very, very little suitcases. There's hardly anything in my suitcase. Zvadoi Kalile, a very light suitcase for an awfully long journey. Am I supposed to be providing for my eternity with a measly $100,000? So what he did was he decided that he's giving away half of his money. Come. And Bizbezelapal gave him money. He gave away half of what he owned to tzedakah. What do you mean? You're not allowed to do that. Didn't we say before that Omar Rabbi Loi, Hamivazvez, Hayivazvez, Yoter Michomesh, you're not supposed to give away more than 20% of what you own? No, that's only in your lifetime. Because there we said, what if you're Yarid Menachasab and then you become someone that the community has to support? Avalacha Misa, the guy is dying. He wants to give it away. He can go away and give it away. Lesamba, we have no problem about doing such a thing.